When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so a long layoff, but we are back. Town Tailgate Podcast. I'm Chris Madrigal, here with my partner, Julio Noso. Sorry, busy summer for us.
We've been too busy winning softball games, man.
Playoffs, baby. Here we come.
Look, I made a commitment in my mind that I wasn't going to record until we lost a softball game. We lost last week, so I was like, you know, I think it's time to record.
That's actually a good one. I didn't...
Literally... Going and practicing opposite field hitting yesterday.
What was our win streak?
Shit, we were on a...
It was only like five, right? It was four. It was until we played the team we lost to last week.
It wasn't necessarily a win streak. It was a lossless streak because we tied with them.
Oh, that's
and then
right.
We tied with another team. So like, but we hadn't lost a game since like... God.
And it was a while. We were playing
beginning
really
of
well.
May? Yeah. I remember there was like a low point when we lost that game. I'm like, I'm fucking sick of losing.
Yeah.
And we didn't stop. We didn't not lose until last week. So it was awesome.
Yeah. But some good news on the ace front. Oh my God, there's a fucking alarm going off in the backyard. Sorry. Good news on the ace front. Our all-star Brent Rooker goes up to his first at bat, hits a beautiful double. Into right center field. Great job, Brent. You showed up for A's Nation very well. That was an interesting... We're going to talk about the All-Star game in a second, but like because they did it in Seattle and the game started at 5, there was just like a massive shadow through the entire game, and like watching the players try and navigate that on top of the like the sun just coming in right there, like I don't know. It was also really hot because it's the summertime. It's such a weird situation, man. I get it. They have to accommodate the two, like, you know, the East Coast, but like a 5 o'clock start first pitch is so weird for the West Coast.
That was my first thought, like, because the first two at bats were like that shot to Adolis Garcia and right.
Yeah.
And then Randy and left. And like, they're struggling. I don't know how they caught those balls, but it's like,
yeah,
everybody in the outfield was just in rough shape.
You're getting like it's like a good half a second late read on the fly ball. It's like because you don't see it coming out of the shadows, and then all of a sudden it's in the air, and you're fighting the sun at the same time. Like, I mean, they all wore sunglasses, but I mean that only does you so much. That was wild to me. But we're gonna talk about that in the upcoming Big Three, obviously. And Mike Trout gets on the IL, so that's gonna be an interesting situation for the Angels. And the Yankees have a new hitting coach, and then we'll get into the A's news, and then we're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of the season so far for the A's. So, Julio, let's start. I mean, might as well just keep going with the All-Star break or the All-Star game. Very bad TV ratings. The lowest it's been, I think, ever. I didn't look at the last few years, but I don't know. I this was a big topic of discussion on Wednesday and Thursday when those rating or Wednesday and today when those ratings came out. I don't really make too much of it, to be honest with you. I mean, look, all All-Star games are down in ratings. So like, are we expecting the Major League Baseball game All-Star game because it's the oldest one to like continue to thrive? Like, come on, what are we talking about here?
I have the specific numbers in front of me. So they were down 7% from last year, drawing 7.01 million viewers. Last year was 7.51 million viewers. So not great, but I think just All-Star, like you said, All-Star games in general across all sports are very lowly viewed. And I think when people try to make a huff about this, it's like, what do you want them to do? Like, you can't really change Maybe you just change the format completely. Maybe you start taking on the ML and like the NBA format. What if you did like a Team USA versus Team World kind of thing?
But their ratings went down too. Like I feel like we have this conversation after all four of the major All-Star games. It's like ratings are all time low, and it's like, what are they going to do to change the game? And then they change it, and then the changes they make are fucking stupid. Like, I mean, they tried to make it interesting a few years ago where they made the winner of the All-Star game the home field advantage for the World Series, and then the players hated that, and then the fans hated that. They thought the fans would like it, but the fans hated it because the fans of the losing team were just like, what the fuck? Like, we had a better record than whatever the other team was. Like, why do we not get home field advantage? I don't know. I watched the game. I was meeting up with friends later, so I watched the game for about an hour and a half, and I enjoyed it. Like, they mic up everybody. It's like conversations during the game. They mic'd up Nathan Eovaldi, and you got to like really like feel out what his like pitching like inning pitching like routine was and how he goes about it, and like he's thinking out loud and how he communicates with Jonah Heim while he's pitching, and like I thought that was fascinating as a fan of the baseball game. But if you're a casual fan, like, you're not really getting much out of there. Like, Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts were mic'd up for an inning together, and they were just bullshitting, which I thought that was cool. If you're a casual fan, maybe if you're a casual fan of the Dodgers, maybe you think that's cool. But like, I just don't know what you do that makes that more interesting. Like, the Home Run Derby wasn't down in ratings though. That's the only thing that matters, the only thing that people care about. So like, why don't you just celebrate the Home Run Derby and just not think too much about the All-Star game?
Except the broadcast of the Home Run Derby sucks. There's so many times where like a ball gets hit, you don't even see where it's going because ESPN's like, oh, too late, we already got out there. And then you got that kid who got beamed in left field in the face from the Vladdy Guerrero one.
But that's not the broadcast fault. That's the new format's fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
The time format, I never understood why they did that. I don't like it. I like the old school format where it's like you got ten. I forgot how many outs you have.
It was 10 outs.
Yeah, and then you just try to hit as many home runs as you can in between. That was all. I mean, remember the Sammy Sosa and Richie Sexton duel back in, was that 2003, 2002? And like, Sammy, I mean, he was juiced, obviously, but he was hitting like 500 foot home runs. Like, that's what I want. Like, let the guys take breaks so they can get everything they can out of the swing. You can really see some fucking big bombs, you know?
Of course, with the Josh Hamilton at Old Yankee Stadium, that was a sick moment during his home run derby.
That was beautiful, dude. Yeah, when he broke the record, that was so much fun.
And the best part of the All-Star game was really kind of like muffled over during the broadcast itself, with the sell the team chant started breaking out at the top of the fifth inning.
Yeah.
So what did MLB and Fox do? It's when they interviewed Shohei Ohtani in the dugout. So it kind of took away from the noise that was happening. But if you went on Twitter that night, you went on Instagram, TikTok, whatever your social media devil is, there's various clips of
threads.
Fans. Now? Yeah. Yeah. Threads. Or the new one I'm stuck on now. Don't ask me about it. It's called Lock It.
Oh, okay. Ask me offline.
Ask me offline. But but like, it's pretty evident that it was a big part of the broadcast. And like, even Juan Soto had said during the hit that Rooker got, he's like, man, he really hit that ball. And he goes, yeah, those chants must have been working.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. There's nothing you really do to fix it. The format's great. I think the players really love being there. I think they love representing the teams they do. Like, you know, I got to go to the game last year, and that's like one of my highlights of my baseball fan life.
Yeah.
And it's like, you just feel the energy, you feel it there. If it's just not a TV experience, if it's not whatever, sell and ads.
And the generation below us they don't experience things like that anymore. They will see the sound bites or whatever on TikTok, and that's it, and that's fine. Like, it is what it is. Like, it's kinda,
start
the All-Star game is more for like the diehard baseball fans that want to like see that and like
start making players go live on TikTok in the dugout.
That would be pretty cool too.
There you go.
I mean, yeah, I mean,
there's ideas, but it's not our job.
Yeah, true.
It can be if you pay us.
The Home Run Derby was still fun, though. I will say, even though the format isn't as good, it is still fun to watch, regardless.
You know, dude, I was at the.
I do miss Boomer the back, but you know, yeah.
I was at the movies that night, and Whitney had gone. We saw No Hard Feelings. Highly recommend. But Whitney had gone in, and at the AMC they have a bar there, and I was like, I'll meet you inside, because it was like when Randy was like three away.
Yeah.
And like he just missed. And I was like, that was awesome. That's great with the timer, but
hell yeah.
Good times. Good times.
All right, we'll move on to the next thing. So Mike Trout, he broke his wrist. He's on my fantasy team. My season's over, so that sucks. Is it wrist or is it his hand? I thought it was his hand.
Well, it was part of your hand? I mean, it was a part of the wrist that I'll look it up while you continue talking about it.
His initial diagnosis was like, oh, he's going to be out like a couple weeks. And then they found out it was a broken bone. And it's like, nah, man. I mean, it's with rehab and everything, especially. And I think it's his throwing hand, too, right? Isn't that the big issue? Like, they compared it to someone else who broke their throwing hand in the past.
It was left hand. It was the fracture of the hamate bone in left hand.
Oh, was it left hand?
Because
that's weird. Okay, so because Dan Patrick's show. Jeff Passan came on. He was comparing it to a person who broke their throwing hand recently. So that's completely different. But regardless, I mean, it's a broken bone. He's going to be out a while. And with the rehab and everything like that, the Angels, I mean, the second that he got hurt, they dropped. I think they lost like 9 of their last 10, and they dropped in the wild card standings, and they were barely holding on in the beginning. I mean, it's just like an absolute, like, with the season, with the Ohtani, free agency looming, like, this is, like, the absolute worst news you could have. Like, what they need desperately to keep him is a playoff run to show him that they're serious, and I think this knocks them out.
Not only just Trout's hurt, Rendon's hurt again. He just stays on the IL.
Zach Nado just sucks when he plays, too.
Yeah, he's been an awful, awful signing for that team. Zach Nitto has been awesome at short. He's on the IL. I believe Max Stassi's still on the IL. Like, they have a graveyard going on in Anaheim. Dude. I'm not calling it Los Angeles still. And this led to, I have a conspiracy theory of what's going on with the Angels. Because remember, end of last fall, shout out to John Frisch, Locked On Angels, that Artie Moreno was going to sell the team. Mm-hmm. Everybody was riding that high. And then all of a sudden, Artie's like, I'm going to backtrack that. I'm not going to sell the team. And my theory is that I think he's like, I want one last year to go all in with this team right now before Ohtani becomes a free agent. We get him off the books or whatever. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then I'll sell the team next fall.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense because you lose value in your franchise if you lose Ohtani. So you lose like probably at least $500 million in what the money you're going to make when you sell it.
But that's what was happening with the Nationals. When the Nationals sold their franchise off, that's why they traded off Scherzer and Trey Turner and traded Soto. It's because, like, we're getting all these big contracts off the books. So, like, it makes this franchise more appealing that you don't have to immediately invest into these huge, huge numbers.
That's completely different, though. That you have the face of baseball who's going to just bring in, like, ad money and, like, merchandise money like nobody's business. So I don't agree with that.
But I think that
analysis, because you will lose value in the franchise.
But I think my hot trick with all that is Mike Trout's going to get traded in the fall.
I mean,
and that if Ohtani leaves, Trout's going to get traded. The team gets sold off, and then they start.
If they're
over
smart,
from the
they trade them. They trade them both this deadline because they'll actually. I mean, if it's Ohtani, with Ohtani, they have to trade him. If they don't, they're just stupid because they're just going to let him walk for nothing. You should absolutely trade him now to a team that he wants to go to, like the Dodgers, that will pay, who have the prospects to bring over, that will pay like the price and will extend him and all that stuff. Not much of a change for him. Like, I just, you know, every expert is saying the same thing too, and it's just like the writing's on the wall. I'm sorry, Angels fans. Actually, I'm not sorry. You know, like, fuck you guys. It's the reality of the situation. Like, it's...
I just don't think that whatever asking price the Angels are going to want will be matched for a guy who's potentially going to be there for a few months. Let's say a team like the Braves matches that deal. Why bring in trading all these prospects? Let's say it's going to take at least 4 or 5 guys to get one Ohtani.
When he's the best player in baseball?
And you can go get a... Yeah, if you could, but here's the thing. If you do that, you have to win a World Series or it's going to be a failure. Because if not, there's a good chance this guy is going to walk, and unless you're the Dodgers or the Mets or the Padres, Yankees, this guy's going to walk. Like, what are you going to do to keep them there? So it's so huge risk, but huge reward.
Interesting storyline that I think needs to be, like, that a lot of people, a lot of casual fans aren't keeping in mind with Ohtani is, if you trade him to New York, if you trade him to the Mets, I mean, the Mets would be a terrible decision. They're so far back in the standings. If you trade him, but let's say you trade him to the Mets, there is a likelihood he will walk. He wants to be on the West Coast, and the reason why is because his wife lives in Japan, and she's like this big like pop star or something like that. And so he wants to have a close flight to go back and forth when he needs to, like during the off season and stuff like that. If you put him on the East Coast, he's going to leave because he's going to want to come back to the West Coast. It's like, it's a big thing in that – like Mets and Yankees fans like are just completely not seeing, like he does not want to be there. Even if the Braves, do they even have, I mean, they would have to get rid of one of their stars probably. Like they, I don't know if they have the only prospect packages that really like that could do anything based on my, you know, just off the top of my head is the Dodgers and
I think if know. You're
Dodgers
if,
are loaded in their farm system still though. It's crazy.
If you're the Braves, I think you would have to start the conversation with Michael Harris, and then there's a top prospect, pitching prospect, AJ Shouster. I had him on my fantasy team for like a minute. But you would have to start the conversation with those two.
But like, oh my god, I'm the best team in baseball. Like I get it, this like puts
I would do it if I was a Braves.
But that's not enough. If I'm the Angels, that's not enough.
At least that's the start of the conversation. There's obviously got to be a lot more to it.
There's got to be a lot more to it than that. Like, a lot more. The Dodgers could throw – they have two pitchers in their farm system. They got two shortstops. Throw both those guys at them and, I don't know, throw someone else. I think they have a catcher, too. They have a catcher in their farm system that's really good. You throw all those guys, like, that's paying the price, and you're going to take the risk because if you're the Dodgers, because you are pretty confident that he's going to stay. I mean, we could do Ohtani trades and stuff like that. Talk all day long. We don't have to.
Keep we'll bring on John there, and it'll just be him.
But it's just, but crying. Like, I guarantee John would tell you to fuck off on your Braves like trade idea. You know what I mean? Like, I just, yeah, you got to, and if you're a team, like, is it worth the risk? Like, if I'm the Braves, is it worth the risk to give up like two of my biggest prospects, potentially three, if. Because I'm on the East Coast, like there is a likelihood that we only have him for 2 months. Like, I don't know, man. It's just,
I don't think it's going to happen. It sounds like you're going to, but also what if the Angels turn it around? But I think we're both in the same thought of they're not going to turn it around.
They totally could. Like, oh, hold on. I have the standings up right here. Let me see. They are right now. Currently they are 5 games back from the third wild card spot, which is Houston. The Yankees are behind Houston, Boston, which I wouldn't put too much into the Boston situation. They've won a few games lately, but let's be realistic. Seattle, Julio Rodriguez could definitely go on a run and turn that team around. And then there's the Angels, and Minnesota's in the mix, but probably not really. I just feel like they're going to fall a little bit. And right now in the wild card are Baltimore, Toronto, and Houston, which are all three very good, very talented baseball teams. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. The Yankees are also very good and very talented. So is Seattle. It would be quite the dogfight.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Yankees have new hitting coach, Sean Casey. Hey. Media funny guy. I don't know.
Baseball analyst, former Cincinnati Red great. Mm-hmm. He was a 3-time All-Star during his time in the majors. Yeah, most of you who remember him during his years at Cincinnati when it was like him, Adam Dunn, Ken Griffey Jr. And he also had a couple stints in Detroit, Pittsburgh, Boston, and then in Cleveland. He's a career 302 hitter. The on-base percentage of .367, which is pretty good. But we're not here to talk about his playing career. We are now talking about his current coaching career. If you didn't hear, the Yankees fired their hitting coach right at the end of the first half of the season. The offense has been putrid ever since Aaron Judge has gone down. They've had a losing record during that time as well, and they needed a change in the clubhouse. Could it be Aaron Boone, the guy who's kind of really seems like it's been over and over the same thing with him? No, it's not Aaron Boone. They're going to bring in somebody who has zero coaching experience to help fix their hitting situation.
I'm more bummed as a fan of Sean Casey, the media personality. He's fucking hilarious, and he's
I love him on
LB
Network. Yeah,
yeah, on LB Network. He also has a podcast too, and he does regular appearances on both Le Batard and Dan Patrick, and he's just like always a great guest. That's his calling. This is a weird career move by him. I don't know if I had such a thriving media career, and I don't know why I would want to be a hitting coach. I don't know, man. I don't know.
So it's a win-win situation for him.
1,000%.
And yeah. Because it's like, if he goes, they continue to suck. Cool. Going back to my old job where I'm crushing it on MLB Network. If it works and he does a great job, awesome. I'm going to be a major league coach and going to be sticking around for a while and potentially become a manager if things go well. I don't think it's going to work. I don't know what he's going to be able to teach these guys, and it's July in 3 months that they don't, or 2 months, really, 2.5 months that they don't already know, or somebody in that coaching staff doesn't already tell them. I don't know what it is. But hey, the Yankees have had a track record now recently of hiring coaches with no prior coaching experience who came from TV with Aaron Boone. So, hey, maybe they think they can strike gold twice, or lightning strikes twice. I don't know. You know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah. Maybe he can resonate with the younger guys like Volpe and those guys. Maybe the old hitting coach wasn't doing that, you know? So maybe they just needed a change like that. Maybe it was a personality change. Because these prospects that, you know, a few years ago were this big deal for the Yankees and everybody was talking about, they're not doing too much with their bat at least this season. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know how many more freebies you can give Aaron Boone before you just like can him. Like, it's kind of,
the whole front office, dude. That was like,
Cashman's pathetic. Yeah, I listened to Bill Simmons, and they brought on a Yankee expert, and he was talking about the Cashman resume, and like even the World Series championships in the late 90s, early 2000s, like he didn't put together those teams. He came in after all those guys were like discovered by the previous regime. It's like pretty crazy.
Yeah, and the only year they won was without. Or on his own is 2009, and those teams are so stacked. Like, if you didn't win a World Series with A-Rod, Mark Teixeira, Jeter, like that stacked like middle lineup, then like get out of here. Like, you don't deserve to be in baseball.
I would argue
CC at the top of the rotation.
I would argue they underachieved those seasons because they were so stacked.
Yeah, no, they did. A-Rod was like the best player in the world for a few of those years, and they did nothing out of it.
Yeah, man.
Well, who knows? I'm hoping nothing but failure for the Yankee organization in every which way of turn, because it makes me happy. A's news. Chris!
Yeah.
Try not to yell, because Whitney's in the room.
Windows are open, but they're finally coming, boys.
The boys are in town.
The guys that we've been talking about for 2 years now, Tyler Soderstrom and Zach Gelof, they are finally being brought up to the major leagues. The last time we spoke about Soderstrom on this podcast, he had been making the gradual move over to catcher. He had actually played more games in AAA at catcher than at first base, but since then...
Or gradual move to first. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. But since then, he has been playing more games at first. I think that it was just, you know, trying to get him comfortable. I think he started the season playing 29 games at catcher and only 10 games at first base, and now it's about 31 games at catcher or something like that, 30-some games, and then it's been about 35 games at first base. So I would imagine he goes and plays first base. What does that mean for Ryan Noda? One of them plays DH and one of them plays first base, and they just switch back and forth, give them a day off. It's going to be great, and they'll both be hitting great. Zach Geloff, I think this means the writing is on the wall for Jace Peterson. Look, man, no one really likes you anyway, so good luck.
He kind of put his nail in the coffin when he made the Vegas comments. It'd be awesome to play, which is like, look, dude, I think there was no harm, no foul in those comments, but I think we were in a very sensitive time in our lives. We're like, we don't want to hear that, dude. Like, that's not wrong. And also, I think Tyler's definitely getting a lot of reps at catcher as well. I know, I think Manny Pena recently got a little banged up. I'd imagine him or Carlos Perez probably by the end of the month won't be on this team anyways. So pretty much him and Shea are going to be behind the plate. And then whoever isn't going to be behind the plate will be DHing. And then whoever is going to be not at first will be DHing with Noda. It's going to be awesome. Like, it, no better way for him to make his major league debut in Oakland. Oakland is not too far from about, what, hour plus from Turlock. So his family will be there in attendance.
Yeah.
This is probably, like, this is honestly, like, we'll talk more in a second about the other stuff, but this has been, like, one of the better weeks in recent memory for A's fans. I was, like, genuinely giddy when I got that news that Geloff and him are both getting called up.
Yeah, it was, like, fucking finally. That was, like, that was the first thing I said when you texted that to me.
Yeah, it really incentivizes us to watch, you know, we've been bad A's fans. I haven't been watching as much games as I used to, and rightfully so. But it incentivizes us to pay more attention because, like, the guys that we've been wanting, we've been talking to each other and talking to you all for years about, we're finally get to see them in the bigs.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. Now, Tyler Soderstrom's numbers are a bit down this year in Vegas, but I think that's more so the getting adjusted to the AAA level. That being said, he still was the starter in the Futures game this year. Geloff was playing in the WBC for Team Israel. He's been able to see some major league pitching throughout this time. It's exciting times. I'm so happy these guys are both finally going to be up. It gives us a little bit of joy again.
Yeah, Soderstrom, his numbers are only bad as a recent. He started off the season pretty good. He had a lot of home runs at the beginning of the season, but yeah, I mean, so this brings up the question of, like, so I think there is a place in our future for Ryan Noda, but I, you know, I feel like that when I was thinking about him and his involvement in Soderstrom being brought up, like, a few guys came to mind in the history of the A's organization. Like, the most, I think the best example is Ryan Healy. Remember when Ryan Healy had that season where he flew up and he had like 20 something home runs and had a couple walk-offs and it was like a big deal? Well, Ryan Healy played third base. So Matt Chapman comes through the minor system and he's just guns a-blazing. So, you know, the front office has no choice but to bring him up. Comes up and just starts crushing it, especially on the defensive end. So what they move Ryan Healy over to first base. Okay, no big deal. Well, then the following year, Matt Olson comes guns a-blazing, just smacking home runs like it's nobody's business in AAA. Like, it was the same numbers that he was hitting in single-A when he first started there. He had, like, a roller coaster situation in the minors. He was, like, he hit the shit out of the ball in single-A, went to double-A, struck out a bunch, went to AAA, and just hit the shit out of the ball again. So then they're like, okay, Ryan Healy, let's move him to DH. Oh, well, Chris Davis's arm is beginning to be quite a liability in left field. Gonna have to move him to DH. So what they trade him. I don't know if that's gonna be exactly the situation that happens with Noda, but I'd see a version of that.
I think all these guys are, I wouldn't be shocked, you're right, but I wouldn't be shocked if one of these guys ends up having to make a permanent move out of whatever position they're at. I know, like, Shea's been great behind the plate. He has been had some, like, kind of bumps in the road, and he does have a decent enough speed where I can see him maybe being like a right fielder or something. So, and Tyler's so huge, I think he has to be a first baseman kind of thing. So with I think the one person realistically will probably be Noda. I think he has to find a way to start learning to play other positions, or potentially being on a different team, and maybe he does want to be on a different team. We don't know.
Yeah. I've never seen a catcher with the defensive abilities like Shea to be like, you know what, we're going to throw you in outfield now. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
That's
why
true.
Why would you give up that side of the baseball just so that he, in the hopes that his bat picks up a little bit? Like, his bat, he's already hitting home runs. Like, if you look at his stat line along with catchers, like, you know, it's not that out of the realms of reality. Like, Sean Murphy wasn't, like, an amazing hitter his first season either. Like, it's just the catcher woes, and it's his rookie season. Like, so, yeah. And yeah, Tyler's too – he's just too big to not play at first. And you can't have a guy of that caliber talent, like, in your farm system, like, DH. You just can't. It's just, like, not – it just doesn't make sense, you know?
Absolutely. So
I don't know.
We'll see. Know. Yeah. Either way.
As for Zach, he should be fine.
Hype for the first time. Yeah, exactly. He'll play somewhere with third, short, second. He'll be somewhere in the middle of the field.
There won't be drama with him. He'll probably play third, especially because Diaz is plays second. So yeah.
All right, let me give you a quick rundown, folks. The MLB draft. There's going to be people who are a lot more knowledgeable and a lot more smarter with these kind of things that will give you a breakdown much better than we will. But I at least want to give you some insight on who these people are. So with the 6th overall pick, the A's drafted Jacob Wilson out of Grand Canyon University in Arizona. He is just shortstop. If you might recognize the last name, his dad, Jack Wilson, was a former major leaguer. He is an all-star a few times with the Pittsburgh Pirates as well as the Seattle Mariners. People are saying that he was a little bit of a reach at his position and where the A's took him at. But something that the A's are really excited about is he is a super high contact hitter. He only struck out 4 times throughout his college career, which is pretty insane. And he's also a pretty nice plus defender. So when we'll see him in the bigs, we'll see. But that's going to be something that'll be nice for the A's to have there.
He played and then in with the WAC, second though. Round. He played in the WAC. The WAC is not a conference.
WAC, the WAC, just say it, dude. It's in the name.
Yeah, it's pretty WAC. Yeah.
And then with the 39th overall pick, the Oakland Athletics selected Miles Naylor. He is a third baseman, but will be bounced around the middle infield out of St. Joan of Arc Catholic Secondary School in Mississauga, Ontario, Canada. Now, why does that last name sound familiar to you at all? He is the brother, the youngest brother of Josh and Bo Naylor, both who are playing with the Cleveland Guardians. And he's also already got an Oakland connection. His cousin, Denzel Clark, is in the minor league system. This guy was also contributed to be a little bit of a reach as well. He's going to be pretty similar to what his brothers are, hitting for power. We'll see when it comes to on base and average and all that fun stuff. We'll see in the future. But taking somebody out of high school, 39th overall pick, it sounds like the organization does have some confidence in him. And I think just seeing the track record of what his brothers and what his cousin is becoming kind of gives faith in why you should take those guys that high. So that's your rundown of the A's two picks. If you want much better expert analysis on it, highly
hit
recommend.
Up
if you're not, yeah, hit up Melissa Lockhart. She's been doing some great write-ups. She had a huge write-up the other day about the day 2 and day 3 picks. A lot of high upside guys that they were taking in these later rounds. So we'll see. There's all that.
Yeah,
what do we got last?
The A's are kind of known for reaching. So
at least it wasn't a quarterback this time.
Yeah. All right, last piece. Mertau, she went to the All-Star game and she met with Rob Manfred and presented him with the Oakland proposal again to open up the conversation. I don't know, dude. I don't really know how to inform our listeners more on that. I mean, I just like everything that Major League Baseball says is the opposite of what they do. So,
yeah. So pretty much, read through a few things Ken Rosenthal wrote. Interviewed her and spoke that wrote a piece about it separately, but pretty much she's had no conversation with Rob Manfred at all, and that Oakland ownership and Dave Cavill told him not to speak with her. That so they're trying to go around her, so she just wanted to have a one-on-one conversation with them. She brought up all the proposals. She showed that ever since the announcement for the A's moving to Vegas happened in April, they've actually raised more money. It's looking closer to like $1 billion worth of funds that are getting contributed to the Howard Terminal site through grants that are getting processed, everything else. So more or less, she's making John Fisher look more and more dumb every single day. And she had a great interview with Casey Pratt. I recommend looking it up. But she had more or less said that, and like, we're going to keep finding this. She's like, I'm a natural fighter. She's like, I was a survivor of domestic violence. I'm a child. I immigrated here as like a child. I'm a single mother. I'm like, my instinct's to fight. I'm not letting this thing happen until the shovel's in the ground. And that fucking rules. I love that mindset. You rarely get to see politicians who really will do something like that. Not only did she bring a binder of material for Rob Manfred, she brought it for all 29 other owners in baseball so they can read through it and analyze it themselves. It's not over, folks. It's just your daily dose of hopium.
Yeah, I mean, she inherited the situation, so, you know, and I think it's a platform that she ran on, so it you know, if I'm a constituent, I'm pretty happy with you know, the elected official that I elected so far, because she's doing what we elected her to do. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it does anything, but that's just me.
We'll see. Till shovel's on the ground. It's my mindset.
I know. That's your saying. All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and then we'll be back with the good, the bad, and the ugly in the first half of the A season.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. Did you see Air? You saw Air, right?
Oh yeah, loved Air.
Yeah, dude, Air was sick. Sorry, I just thought of, because that's the Ben Affleck, Jimmy Fallon skit from SNL.
Oh yeah,
the radio host, and they're just like super offensive. So when I thought of Ben Affleck, that was the first thing I thought of. All right, welcome to our segment.
I thought you were gonna tell me you took up skateboarding lessons.
No, what's that?
No, and he's like, why are you skateboarding? He's like, I'm having a midlife crisis.
Yeah. That movie's so good. If you haven't seen Air, you should go watch Air. It's on Amazon. All right, new segment, good, the bad, and the ugly. We are going to each have one, bring up one thing about the first half of this 2023 season, a good thing, a bad thing, and an ugly thing. Unfortunately, there's two negative things in there. Because it's been a rough season, but we're going to hopefully bring you up with one positive. Julio, why don't you go first? What's your good?
My one good person that I really like to focus on is going to be JP Sears.
Oh, wow.
JP Sears has genuinely surprised me on how well he's been pitching in this rotation. I thought it was like, oh, who's going to be the person to help lead this team and the rotation? Is it going to be James Caprillion? Is it going to be Paul Blackburn? Is it going to be Waldichuk? Is it going to be Kyle Muller? And I probably would have had those four ahead of, and was it going to be Mount Fuji? I would have had all five of them at the beginning of the season over JP Sears. He's been pitching, been pretty good for most of the part throughout this whole season. He's got a 3.88 ERA. And in three of his last four starts, he's given up two runs or less. Now, don't look at the win-loss record. That is not an indication of how he's been as a pitcher, because he's been having some really terrible luck when it comes to run support, bullpen blowing games, all that fun stuff. Yeah. But JP has really been a revelation for this rotation. I think that we saw kind of glimmers of it when he was with the Yankees. He had a couple solid spot starts for them last year. And to kind of see it full circle this year in his full season as an A, it's been pretty optimistic on what has been really a terrible, terrible rotation that's been a massive disappointment for this team. he's been the one bright spot. So that's the one person that I really want to observe. Obviously, there's a few other guys that will definitely give him their kudos when you do your 2 cents as well. But JP is the one that I've been really surprised, and he's been performing well.
Dude, and we saw it in his first couple starts for the A's last year when he got traded over. Like, I was really high on him. Remember, in this offseason, I was like, he's going to be a future spot in the rotation. You were kind of like a little bit hesitant, which I get. It makes sense. Like, you know, there wasn't like a crazy stat line in his minor leagues about his, you know, how well he played. But when he hit AAA, he was like really pitching well. And like, dude, our A's front office is really good at that. They find like these diamonds in the rough where it's like, you know, his first couple years in minors not so well, but he's been doing really well in AAA, and they kind of find out what, like, he maybe changes the mechanics or something like that. Maybe he found a new pitch that he's just been crushing. Like, who knows what it is, but new approach. But yeah, it's been great. I'm a big JP fan. My good is finding diamonds in the rough in Brent Rooker and Ryan Noda. Year after year, this front off. Look, when we were talking about, like, the draft, for example, with the A's, and you said they reached, and I was like, yeah, the A's have a history of reaching. That was kind of a bit of a slight, because it's like they have a history of reaching in the draft, and then they kind of think they're the smartest man in the room, and then a couple years later, they're bust. Like Logan Davidson, first-round pick, first round pick, and now he's kind of a bust in the system. It's like they keep doing this, and Kyler Murray, another example. It's like they keep doing this because they keep on acting like they're the smartest man in the room, and then they fucking look stupid 3 years later. Well, they make up for it by finding guys like this, by finding a Brent Rooker who was a top 10 pick, and he had some injuries, but they bring him in, and they work with him, and he's a fucking all-star. Ryan Noda, same thing, like kind of like bounce around the league a little bit. Like, I don't know how they do it. Like, Ramon Laureano is a good example of this in the past. Like, they fucking found Ramon out of nowhere. Like, he wasn't like a highly touted guy, and you know, Paul Blackburn's another guy. You know, it's just like they do it year after year after year, and I got to give them credit. And so, like, the good has been just finding those two guys. And we talked about Ryan Noda the first half about, like, I don't know if he's going to be a part of the future. I hope he is, but he's going to be a part of a major league club's future. He proved that he has a great approach at the plate. So that's mine.
Yeah, and I agree with what you said. Like, I think idealistically we all want him here in Oakland.
Yeah.
We'll see, because right now that looks like he's going to be kind of thrown into a logjam. And that's kind of what happened, why he ended up in Oakland in the first place. The Dodgers had a logjam. Freddie's got a 10-year deal, and they just signed JD Martinez. Where's this guy going to be playing? So that's the reason why he ended up there in the first place. So I agree, though. Confidently, he'll be out there. Hell yeah. Finding Rook, that's been amazing. He was an all-star this year. His numbers, he fell off a little bit, or a lot, really, since probably the end of May, beginning of June. But over the last week, he was showing a little bit more pop. He had an impressive at-bat in the all-star game. I'm hoping that he's going to be somebody who'll be here for at least a few more years, take his time in Oakland.
But it was unrealistic. Alrighty,
Chris, you let me go first.
It was unrealistic to think that was going to be sustainable. His when he came on the scene, was absolutely hitting like .330. As delusional as fans can be, like, I don't think anyone was like, man, this guy's going to be like that. Like, there's no fucking way. Like, you knew he was going to drop. You know he hits in the Coliseum. So hitting .240 in the Coliseum is like hitting .260, which is pretty good. 15 home runs at the All-Star break that's on pace for around like a high 20s, maybe 30s if he like goes on a run. Like, that's what you need, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying he's gonna be the star of our team, but you know, he's gonna be a crucial piece of the future.
Absolutely. Now, you let me go first for the good. I'm gonna let you go first for the bad. What has left just a nasty taste in your mouth for this first half of the season?
So the pitching, but like, I didn't want to do that for ugly, because there have been bright spots in pitching, you know, like the Mason Miller renaissance for those like three starts that he came up. Like, you saw something and like, oh man, like that's going to be our ace. You know, Kyle Muller had a great, you know, the opening day start that he had, that was phenomenal. And also had some quality starts since then. Like, Ken Walichuk's had some great starts since then, but you know, in the bullpen, we don't have to talk about that. But for the most part, the pitching has been bad, yes. But there have been, like, bright spots to where it's, like, it hasn't been a total fucking mess. It has just been bad. So, like, that's kind of where I wanted to go with that.
I'm going to. Well, yeah, I agree. Like, they have the worst team ERA in baseball. I think that first month and a half when they were just like abysmal really screwed them up. They have been playing. They have been pitching a little bit better since then. Like, JP's been settling in. Cap has had some good starts as well, but for most of the part, it's been a huge letdown. I went into the season expecting the offense to be the struggle and the pitching to be kind of the strength of this team.
Fucking opposite.
But then it switched. Something happened where it switched during this season. We're like, shit, how that happened. For me, I'm going to go with the veterans as a group. Dude. They have been putrid. I was genuinely excited when they signed Jace Peterson and Ledesma Diaz because I thought this was going to be one of these situations where, like, Jace had moments with the Brewers where he was an everyday guy, but he showed enough for, like, hey, this, you know, he had his, where he was shining. So I think of Ledesma Diaz. He was an all-star with the Cardinals in his rookie year in 2016. It's like, hey, maybe we can, with this no-pressure situation where, you know, you're not really going to be dependent on to be the guys, go out there and play. It would be better than what we've seen out of these two. And it's not just these two. Jesus Aguilar was a huge bust of a signing. He was great. He had showed power in the first month, and then that was it. He's not even in baseball anymore. Tony Kemp, I don't know what to do at this point. I don't think he's going to be on this team by the end of this month either, which really sucks. You know how much I love him, but reality is it's setting in.
I got a poster on my wall, bro.
Yeah, and, you know, we got to have this realistic talk, too. Ramon's toast, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know if he needs a change of organization. I don't know if he's still in his own head after his PED suspension, but, like, the guy really hasn't been anywhere close to the same player as he was during the 2018-19-2020 season.
Yeah.
And it's been because of that, like, it's indicated in the A's record. Some of these guys, we're not expecting you have like a +5 WAR or something like that, but, like, you guys have been seeing enough baseball where you can help contribute to wins in one way or another. And realistically, none of them really have. Jace had that one game where he went like 5-for-5 or 6-for-6 with like 2-3 home runs out of nowhere. TK, of course, is always going to be a plus defender. Ramon is always going to be making plays in the outfield as well. But, like, these guys, when you have multiple rookies in the rotation, multiple rookies surrounded by you, you have guys who are DFA'd from other teams by you, like, you are the ones we're kind of relying on to be do something on the field, and they've all just fell flat. It's been a huge letdown for me.
It's not even that. It's like clutch moments too. Like, it's not those guys in the late innings that help, like, you know, get the go ahead, you know, runs or to win the game or the walk offs. It's the fucking young guys who are doing it. It's Estarui Ruiz. It's fucking Ryan Noda. It's fucking Shea Langeliers who are, like, winning the game for you. And it's just like that. And you know, like, there's games where they're down by a run or they're tied in the bottom of the ninth, and, like, Ramon gets up to bat, and it used to be the other way around. It's like, okay, that's who I want. I don't want Ruiz, the young guy there. And now it's like the other way around. It's like, man, when does Ruiz get up to bat? Oh, fuck, fourth? I don't even know if they'll make it fourth in the order. Like, it's just, ugh. It's just like, it's just so, it's like sad. Ramon especially, because he's been around for so long. He was like the last piece of the of the last era. So it's like to see him, like, just be, I mean, abysmal is, I don't even think, it's just like depressing. It's, yeah, I don't know. It's fucking weird.
Like, dude, at this point with Ramon, this is his, let me see. Let me look at his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is his sixth year in Oakland.
Yeah,
like,
man.
He's seen it, man. Like, he's, and it's like, at this point, it's like, yeah, man, I don't know what to do at this point. He's probably, they'll probably have to DFA him at some point when they want to call up Lawrence Butler or if they want to take another flyer on another outfielder. So we'll see, man. Real bum of a situation.
All right, what's your ugly?
That wasn't the most.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to transition into that. Mm-hmm. It's a toss-up between these two, but I'm going to go with the more recent memory that really hurts. Watching that All-Star game and watching five former A's as All-Stars, and potentially sixth if Matt Chapman would have sustained a little bit more, hurt so much, man. Hurt so much watching Murph out there
when
starting.
When Marcus starting.
Get the third watching out. Jonah Heim starting.
Getting that third out in the first inning. Who was that? Garcia out at second. I was like, oh, dude, that hurts.
Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray came in and pitched well.
Yeah.
Matt Olson. And the thing that crushed me even more was I saw a post on Baseball Reddit where it showed all the Braves at the All-Star game with like holding a bat. And in front of them is the years that their contracts expire. And every single person's contract was at least, at the earliest it was ending, was like 2027. It's like Matt Olson, 2030. Sean Murphy, like 2029. It hurt seeing how like Marcus... And like I saw an interview with Marcus where they're like, "Oh, what's something you people want to know?" But he's like, "Well, I love the Bay Area. I was born and raised. My family's still out there." And I'm like, "That's the ugliest part. That hurt the most watching that, more than the Vegas stuff, because I feel like we knew it was going to come at some point or another. That was the worst thing." So
yeah,
that.
I think for the listeners, just we're keeping this subject on the field. We're not going to say like, "Oh, the stadium situation. Oh, the Vegas announcement." That's not going to be the ugly. Like, don't. Like, if you're sitting around listening, waiting to hear that, you can just turn it off now, I guess, because that's not what we're going to talk about.
I was going to say just how they've alienated the fans with that announcement since then. Everything they've done to alienate the fans, that's all I'm going to say about it. The fact that the drummers aren't there anymore.
It's just like...
That's pretty ugly.
I wanted to stay away from that, from this subject, because it's like, all I have to do is go on Twitter if I want to, like, hear A's Nation talk about, complain about the stadium more, you know?
It's an echo chamber.
Yeah.
It's an echo chamber, yeah.
Mine is just Eledmys Díaz's entire just run with the A's organization is just ugly, and it's just, I don't know what to do about it, man, because I think I picked him as like the season, the A's MVP at the end of the season, like with our preseason picks. Like, it's just so ugly, and it just needs to end. Like, it just needs to end, man. It's just not it. And
I think he's a sleeper agent with the Astros.
Why would the Astros care about us anymore? That's the real question. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true.
One thing about the Astros, did you love how they got booed when they got announced, like, went down the red carpet of the All-Star game? That was so great.
Awesome.
That was so great.
Even Dusty. I'm like, look, Dusty's the one person. Like, don't boo Dusty. He's earned his stripes.
Well, I mean,
don't ever boo Dusty.
I felt bad for, like, Kyle Tucker, because he wasn't on those teams. And, like, Jordan Alvarez was, I think, though, wasn't he? Maybe the like
he wasn't there yet.
Oh, he wasn't there yet.
It was 2018. So yeah,
getting,
he was there.
They're
kind of
getting booed for no, and Valdez, like, they're not getting booed for no reason, but like, you know, it's just gonna be with them
for the rest of their career, even if they weren't there. Yeah. It's also kind of interesting. I thought about this, that both managers in Texas are both former Giants managers. Trippy, huh?
Who's the Rangers manager again?
Bochy.
Oh, Bochy. Oh, yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, weird, right? I was like, oh, shit.
Old fucks. Oh, man. Wow. That's crazy.
Just go make them fight.
Oh, man. Yeah. All right. Well, that's the good, the bad, the ugly, and hopefully the rest of the season will... I don't know. It's probably going to be more of the same. All right. Upcoming schedule. This weekend, All-Star break is over. The A's are back in town versus the Twins, and then Boston comes to town next Monday through Wednesday. Julio, who's your essential tailgate tool of the week coming up?
F it. All in. Tyler Soderstrom. Let's go. Make noises. Loud
okay.
Soderstrom noises.
Cool.
Out of Turlock.
Then I'm going to pick Zach Gelof. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go for that. No, I mean, let's give the people what they want. Like, this is what we're going to be watching this weekend. This is what we want to see. Like, how are they going to do? How are they going to, you know, how are they going to fit in with the team? How's the future going to look? So, like, let's not try to be cute. Let's just do what it is. Like, these are the guys that we want to watch and see how it goes.
And for the folks at home, Gelof is spelled gel off. A gel of. Fuck. Screw that up.
You mean pronounced? You said spelled.
Whatever. Gel of.
Good. I can't wait to. I've been saying it wrong, so I can't wait to hear. Oh my God. Why am I totally blanking on.
dude, Vince's name.
Vince,
6'3"?
I can't wait to hear Vince. Yeah, these are big boys, dude. I can't wait to hear.
I didn't realize he was that big. God damn.
Can't wait to hear Vince and Doskow say those names. So it's going to be great.
You know how excited Dallas probably is that he's got another 209 representative with them?
Probably juiced, yeah. 1,000%.
I think Turlock's
too. Yeah, that's 209. That's 209. Yeah, it is. Modesto area.
Let's see. Yep, 209. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Dallas is probably giddy. Good. See, give Dallas some excitement, man.
One random little thing at the end. Liam Hendricks won the Jimmy V Award or SP for, I don't know, fighting cancer. So that was pretty cool seeing that yesterday. So good job, Liam. Keep fighting cancer.
We'll probably be seeing him on a different team at the end of the month as well.
You think so? Oh, yeah, White Sox. Yeah, all of the White Sox are gone.
They're all gone.
Yeah. All right. All right, Julio, anything we missed?
No. Glad to be back. Took some time off. I think we needed it all for
mental health. And this is a segment where we're going to talk about Dame trades. So if you want to stay tuned for 30 more minutes, we're going to just talk about Damian Lillard trade. I'm just kidding.
Damian Lillard trade analysis.
Dude, I've been listening to so many podcasts on Damian Lillard trades, and I can't get enough of it. I'm still listening to all of them. It's so great.
Just somebody do something.
Yeah.
James Harden, go get... I just love how people are like, the Clippers are going to be like, what can the Clippers offer?
They've got nothing to
offer.
They gave up
Paul
George.
They have nothing.
That's it. Paul George and picks.
And who's like, no... So, and yeah, what are you going to do? Like, what picks?
Yeah.
All the picks are gone until, like, 2028.
Oh, man. Yeah, James Harden's going to be on the Sixers, and it's going to be fine.
Why don't they just flip him? But Dame's like, I won't go Philly. I'm like, well, whatever, dude.
I mean, he doesn't have a no trade clause, though. Okay, we can stop. Okay, this is a baseball
player.
All right, thank you. Thank you for listening, everybody.
There is one thing we forgot about.
Oh, yeah, what?
We are a member of the
Fan First Podcast Network. Oh. Go ahead and check them out. Big shout out, Fan First Podcast Network. Check us out on Twitter at Town Tailgate. We have to probably get a Threads soon. Threads is blowing up.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll work on
that. I haven't
that.
Been tweeting as much either, just because, again, what do we do?
Yeah, we will this weekend, though.
Get in the echo chamber.
Yeah, we'll be tuning into the Zach and Tyler show. So check that out. Cool. So yeah, we'll engage with you guys on Twitter. Hopefully they play well. Hopefully they play. We'll see what happens. Julio's doing the dance. All right. Last but not least, Julio.
Let's go, Oakland.